Welcome, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
A court in military-ruled Myanmar has found the country's former leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, guilty of corruption. The court sentenced Suu Kyi to 5 years in prison Wednesday, in the first of several corruption cases against her. Suu Kyi was ousted by an army takeover in February of last year. She has denied accusations that she had accepted gold and hundreds of thousands of dollars given to her as a bribe by a top political official. Both her supporters and independent legal experts consider her prosecution unjust. They believe it is an attempt to discredit Suu Kyi and legitimize the military's seizure of power. The court ruling also prevents the 76-year-old elected leader from returning to political office. Suu Kyi is the daughter of Aung San, Myanmar's founding leader. She became famous in 1988 during a failed uprising against an earlier military government. She spent 15 of the next 21 years under house arrest for leading a nonviolent movement for democracy. The army permitted an election in 2015 in which her party won a large victory. She then became the leader of the country. However, Suu Kyi has also been criticized for ignoring human rights violations. She has defended a 2017 military campaign against Rohingya Muslims. Rights groups have called it genocide. She has already been sentenced to 6 years in prison in other cases. She faces 10 more corruption charges. The most severe punishment possible under the Anti-Corruption Act is 15 years in prison and a fine. If she is convicted in other cases, she could be sentenced to more than 100 years in prison. Mo Thuzar is with the Yusof Ishak Institute, a Southeast Asian studies center in Singapore. He said the charges are only believable to the court and the military's supporters. Even if there were any legitimate concerns or complaints about corruption, enforced military rule is certainly not the way to pursue such concerns. Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won a large victory in the 2020 general election, but the army seized power on February 1, 2021. The military arrested Suu Kyi and many officials in her party and government. The army said it took power because there had been widespread fraud in the election, but independent election observers said they did not find any major evidence of fraud. Afterwards, there were large protests nationwide, which security forces crushed. The rights group Assistance Association for Political Prisoners said the campaign led to the deaths of almost 1,800 civilians. Now, some United Nations experts say the country is in a state of civil war. In an earlier case, Suu Kyi was sentenced to 6 years in prison for illegally importing and owning mobile communications devices. She has also been found guilty of violating coronavirus restrictions and sedition. In the case decided Wednesday, she was accused of receiving $600,000 and 7 gold bars from the former chief minister of Yangon. that is the country's biggest city. The chief minister was also a top member of her political party. Her lawyers denied all charges he made against her. The 9 other cases are currently being tried under the Anti-Corruption Act. They include several related to the purchase of an aircraft by one of Suu Kyi's former cabinet members. Suu Kyi is also being tried on a charge of violating the Official Secrets Act and on a charge claiming election fraud. Phil Robertson is the Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch. He said, "Destroying popular democracy in Myanmar also means getting rid of Aung San Suu Kyi, and the junta is leaving nothing to chance." I'm Dan Novak.
Scientists have successfully bred a threatened species of coral, a coral rescue organization announced recently. The breeding was part of a project that hopes to restore damaged reefs off the coast of Florida. Coral reefs in Florida and the Caribbean Sea are being affected by stony coral tissue loss disease. The disease causes coral to lose its color and die after a period of time. The Florida Coral Rescue Center is in part funded by the Disney Conservation Fund and Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida. It has bred hundreds of new rough cactus coral in recent weeks. The breeding center holds a total of 18 Florida coral species that are threatened. Justin Zimmerman of the Florida Coral Rescue Center said there is a possibility that you could return some of these corals to the wild. He added there is a possibility of saving the species by doing that. Stony coral tissue loss disease was first observed near Miami in 2014. By 2017, it had spread to Florida's northernmost reef and later passed Key West to the south. Coral infected with it die off at a rate of 66 to 100%. That is deadlier for coral reefs than coral bleaching, a better-known event that is usually caused by higher water temperatures. Stony coral tissue loss disease represents another threat to the world's coral reefs. They already face serious threats from climate change. The Global Coral Reef Monitoring Network, or GCRMN, is supported by the United Nations and gathers information on coral reefs. The group said in October that 14% of the world's coral was lost between 2009 and 2018.
Twitter has accepted Elon Musk's offer to buy the social media service in a deal worth about $44 billion. Musk, the American billionaire who heads Tesla and SpaceX, has said his goal is to shape Twitter into a more welcoming platform for free speech. Twitter's board of directors voted this week to accept Musk's takeover offer. The deal could be finalized sometime this year, but it still has to be approved by Twitter shareholders as well as regulatory agencies in the United States and other nations where Twitter does business. Shortly after receiving Musk's proposal, Twitter's board established an anti-takeover position known as a poison pill. A poison pill is a financial tool used by companies to block unwelcome takeover attempts. A poison pill is generally designed to limit the number of shares that can be bought by a single investor. Companies permit existing shareholders to buy additional stock at a reduced rate. This method can flood the market with so many newly issued shares that a company takeover becomes too costly. However, poison pills can also be used to improve a company's negotiating position in a takeover deal. Or they can invite additional offers for more money. In Twitter's case, the poison pill seemed designed to prevent Musk from raising his existing share in the company above 15% without negotiating a deal with its board, Reuters news agency reported. Musk answered that position by offering detailed information about his financing plans. These plans showed that he successfully raised $46.5 billion to finance his offer. The amount included $21 billion of Musk's personal wealth. Musk has been declared the world's richest person by Forbes magazine. Industry experts say the financing plan showed how serious Musk was about his offer. And it may have opened the door to other large Twitter shareholders interested in hearing more about his plans for the company. John Meyer is a technology expert and investor. He told the Associated Press he thinks there is nothing better for Twitter than Elon Musk buying it. Meyer said he expects Musk to replace Twitter's current board, invest in new products, and find new ways to improve profits. Musk has the track record that he can do the impossible, Meyer said. Government regulators, both in the U.S. and the European Union, are likely to examine the proposed Twitter deal. The main issues to be considered are how the deal could affect competition in the industry and whether it violates antitrust laws. Twitter shareholders also need to approve the deal. A company can choose to hold a vote at any time, even before regulators have completed their examinations. Twitter's yearly meeting is set for May 25th, so it is possible the vote could happen then. In the past, Musk has been critical of some of Twitter's policies related to free speech issues. Since seeking to take control of the company, he has promised to improve and fix Twitter and make it better than ever. This includes his stated plans to take steps to ensure free speech for all individuals. But he has not provided many details on those plans. Some industry experts fear Musk's desire to establish a free speech platform without limits could lead to more misinformation and hate speech appearing on Twitter. Current Twitter policies against such content can result in users being restricted or banned from the service. Michael Nathanson is an analyst at stock research company Moffitt Nathanson. He told Reuters that possible attempts by Musk to ease content restrictions could turn advertisers away. "We expect advertisers will be less willing to spend on Twitter if Elon Musk removes content moderation in order to promote free speech," Nathanson said. "If that happens," he added, "advertisers on Twitter may move to platforms like Google, YouTube, TikTok, or others." I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Embert. Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term. He was America's 40th president and one of the most popular. During his 8 years in office, many Americans did well financially. Many felt more secure about the future of the nation and the world. The possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union did not seem as great a threat as it had in the past. The Constitution limits presidents to 2 terms. So in 1988, the country prepared to elect a new chief executive. There were 3 main candidates for the Republican Party nomination. They were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and Pat Robertson. Bush had just served 8 years as Reagan's vice president. Dole was the top Republican in the Senate. Robertson was a conservative Christian who had his own television program. Ronald Reagan's popularity helped George Bush gain the Republican nomination. Neither Dole nor Robertson won enough votes in the primary election season to be a threat. Bush was nominated on the first vote at the party convention. The delegates accepted his choice for Vice President Senator Dan Quayle of Indiana. 8 candidates competed for the nomination of the Democratic Party. One of the candidates was Jesse Jackson, a black minister and political activist. He won about 25% of the delegates. He had also sought the nomination 4 years earlier. The Democrats chose Michael Dukakis, the governor of Massachusetts. His running mate was Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. In public opinion surveys, Dukakis looked like a strong candidate after the party conventions. But then he began to lose popularity. Many observers said he had waited too long to launch a nationwide campaign. The candidates heavily attacked each other through campaign advertising on television. Dukakis came under attack from the Bush campaign, targeting his record as governor. Campaign ads said Dukakis had not been tough enough with criminals.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Ads by the Bush campaign also said Dukakis would weaken America's military power. And they accused him of not protecting the environment by seeking a permit to dump sewage from Massachusetts off the coast of New Jersey.
The Environmental Protection Agency called Boston Harbor one of the dirtiest harbors in America. But not long ago, Governor Dukakis proposed a way to help clean it up by dumping Massachusetts sewage sludge off the New Jersey shore, just 106 miles from New York. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. New Jersey can't afford to take that risk.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life.
Dukakis fought back.
George Bush's negative TV ads, distorting my record. Full of lies, and he knows it.
Dukakis accused Bush of not telling the truth about his part in the secret sales of arms to Iran to finance Contra rebels in Nicaragua. He also criticized Bush for being part of an administration that reduced social programs.
I must have been living through a different 8 years than the one that the vice president's been living through, because this administration has cut and slashed and cut and slashed programs for children, for nutrition, or the kinds of things that can help these youngsters to live better lives. Has cut federal aid to education, has cut Pell Grants and loans to close the door to college opportunity on youngsters all over this country. And that, too, is a major difference between the vice president and me.
In the end, Bush's campaign succeeded in making Dukakis look weak on crime and defense. Dukakis did not help himself with a commercial in which he was looking out of a moving tank while wearing a large helmet. Many people made fun of the ad. On Election Day in November, Bush defeated Dukakis by almost 7 million votes. George Bush was sworn into office on January 20th, 1989.
No president, no government can teach us to remember what is best in what we are. But if the man you have chosen to lead this government can help make a difference, if he can celebrate the quieter, deeper successes that are made not of gold and silk, but of better hearts and finer souls, if he can do these things, then he must. We as a people have such a purpose today. It is to make kinder the face of the nation and gentler the face of the world. My friends, we have work to do.
George Bush was the son of a United States senator and had led a life of public service. He joined the Navy when America entered World War II. He flew attack planes. He was just 18 years old, at that time the youngest pilot the Navy ever had. He flew many bombing raids against the Japanese in the Pacific. He was shot down once and rescued by an American submarine. George Bush came home from the war as a hero. He became a university student and got married. He and his wife, Barbara, then moved to Texas, where he worked in the oil business. He ran for the United States Senate in 1964 and lost. 2 years later, he was elected to the House of Representatives. He ran for the Senate again in 1970 and lost again. But by that time, he had gained wider recognition. Over the next 8 years, he was appointed to a series of government positions. He was ambassador to the United Nations. He was chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was America's representative in China before the two countries had diplomatic relations. And he was head of the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1980, Bush ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Bush lost, but became Reagan's running mate. After two terms as vice president, he felt ready to lead the nation himself. The new president took 7 foreign trips during his first year in office. In Europe, Bush met with the other leaders of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He proposed a major agreement on reducing troops and non-nuclear weapons in Europe. The Soviet Union considered his proposal an important step in the right direction. In June of 1989, the Chinese government sent tanks and troops to crush pro-democracy protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed. President Bush took some steps against China, but many critics felt the sanctions were not strong enough. In Central and Eastern Europe, communist governments also faced protests. Since 1987, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had let countries in the Warsaw Pact experiment with political and economic reforms. But those reforms were not enough to stop the fall of communist governments in one country after another. In the summer of 1989, President Bush visited Hungary and Poland. Both nations were trying to develop free market economies. Both were suffering as they moved away from central control. In Poland, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union, Lech Wałęsa, led the push for reform. He would later become president of a democratic Poland.
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
November of 1989 brought a dramatic expression of the changes taking place in Eastern Europe.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
On November 9th, East Germany opened the wall that had divided it from the West since 1961.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant. Something, as you can see, almost a party on. How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history? The East German government said tonight they were going to make more openings in the wall, at least a dozen more, put bulldozers right through the wall so that more people could cross to the West. The East German communist leadership tonight said there'd be a new election law guaranteeing secret elections which the rest of the world could monitor. And only 24 hours after East Germans were told they could go anywhere, anytime, the Soviet Union said that was a sensible move.
Within days, citizens and soldiers began tearing down the wall as the world watched with hope for a new era of peace.
Sam, what's it feel like to be standing on top of the wall?
Incredible for me. It's I can't describe really my feelings. It's something unreal for me.
If there is someone who sleeps for 8 weeks and you told him what happened here, he thinks you're crazy. It's unthinkable. Put my number.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.